Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. You know, catastrophic wildfires don't have to happen. I know that there are some things, you know, winds and nature, but why can't we get ahead of that, right? And there have been studies out there that have shown that lands that have proper management don't burn so intensely if they do get caught into a wildfire here. And this country spends a lot of money in wildfire protection and fighting wildfires. See, maybe we put a little more of that in wildfire prevention and we don't have to spend anywhere from $400 billion to almost $900 billion annually on fighting fires. There is a map out there that kind of shows that common sense route. We're going to talk about that today. We are also going to talk about some suggestions for the Department of Interior. This coming from the good folks at PERC, the Property and Environment Research Center, and Hannah Downey, their policy director today on Voices of Montana Department of Interior. Let's welcome Hannah Downey. She is PERC's policy director here today for Voices of Montana. And PERC is a property and environment research center, but there's so much more. I've had you guys on the air several times. I've looked at your, I think everybody, Hannah, good morning, by the way. How you doing, ma'am?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
Thanks for being on. It's PERC, PERC.org for more information. And you guys, you're serious about getting facts out there about our environment, about property rights and things like that. Tell us a little bit about PERC, and then let's get into these two issues you guys are digging into.
Yeah, thank you so much. So PERC, we're an organization based in Bozeman where we try and look at how can we do natural resource conservation better. Yeah. We look at land, water, and wildlife issues. And from a pretty unique lens, how can we use market tools, incentives, deregulation, improved efficiency, local insights, in order to make sure that we're actually stewarding these resources appropriately. So we do a lot of research. As mentioned, I'm our policy director, so get to work with a lot of state and federal policymakers on how to actually implement these ideas. And then we have an innovation lab where we're using private dollars and private efforts to actually kind of test and implement some of these ideas on the ground.
How have you guys moved the ball forward? I mean, I know you have, and I appreciate that. I think it's 40 years going into it. When you started, as you guys say, you were the lone voice in this wilderness when it comes to conservation, because it was all sort of a one-sided conversation, and the recognition of stewardship was way, way, way down the line. I think you guys have really moved the ball forward in that. And now, I don't know, you've got really some wind behind your sails, I think.
Thank you. Well, I mean, as you've mentioned with some of the wildfire issues, just as an example, I think people have to look around and realize that things have to change, that the way that we've just kind of relied on big regulatory approaches and punitive approaches to try and steward natural resources hasn't worked. We're seeing wildfires destroying, you know, an area larger than the state of Nevada in the past decade. We're seeing a mere 3% recovery rate for endangered species here in Montana. I mean, I think look at the grizzly bear example. I know so many people care so dramatically about that, where we as local communities and the state and everyone have invested in recovering these bear populations, and we're still seeing them listed in all these punitive approaches. So I think part of it is people are just looking around and saying we aren't getting the results we want from this kind of bigger government regulatory approach, and we need a new approach. And at PERC, we're ready to do that.
I very much appreciate that as well, because they keep moving the goalposts when it comes to wolves, when it comes to bears, when it comes to anything where the populace is, you know, they've got buy-in. The agriculture community has buy-in. Mm-hmm. You know, wildlife officials, they'll have buy-in on preservation, on good stewardship. But when they keep you know, pulling, like I say, moving the goalposts on us, the people are going to stop buying in on these things. And that is, that's dangerous precedent to kind of go in that direction. So thank you for the awareness and kind of changing the tide on that. Let's get into these two issues today, as time will probably just evaporate on us here. The wildfire map, as I have been in my circles, you know, I can go into areas where I see wildfire forest treated property and non-treated property. And the difference between a fire on one and a fire on the other is dramatic.
Exactly. I think you're hitting it so nicely. We've reached a point in time where we've realized that just letting our forests be, and the history of, you know, severe suppression and reducing kind of the fuel treatments that we've been doing on these landscapes. And by fuel treatments, I mean going in and using mechanical thinning. So that could be logging. It could be, you know, chainsaw selectively removing small diameter timber. It could be removing brush and all of those pieces, and prescribed fire. So the application of like low intensity fire to help, again, clear some of that brush and debris out off the ground so that we don't have this fuel gloating. So when a fire comes in with all the fuels, it takes off. It's catastrophic. We see it move really quickly. When we're able to remove those fuels through those various treatments, that's when we're able to see the fire severity decrease. We're able to see crews get in and better manage it on the ground. We're able to see that, sure, a fire might rip through, but a lot of trees are still left standing and green, and the forest can recover more easily. The ground isn't charred to a point where things can't regrow. So you're hitting at the exact point. We know what we need to do, and that's really cool to see this broader consensus emerge that we dramatically need to increase the pace and scale of restoration work in our forests.
And how
the challenge, as you're pointing, is how do we get
yes.
there?
Yeah, how do we do that? Go ahead. Yeah. That's the question. How do we get there?
Thank you. Well, at PERC, we've identified a few key barriers, the first really being kind of the regulatory environmental review process. It's before any chainsaw or drip torch or anything can actually be applied on the ground. These projects, especially on federal forest lands, is largely what I'm talking about here. You have to go through an environmental review process, NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, consultations under the Endangered Species Act. There's all these layers that just take so much time in order to be able to say, we want to do this work. We know what's needed to reduce the wildfire risk. Now we're actually applying it on the ground. We've had researchers at PERC look at that timeline. And if you have to do some of the more stringent levels of environmental review, I mean, you're looking at 7+ years easily. Add on litigation, and in Montana, we're a unique hotbed for environmental litigants trying to challenge these restoration efforts and hold up that forest management work. Add in litigation, you're looking at a decade plus easily. So that's one of the major obstacles that we're trying to change, is how do we improve the policies and streamline that permitting so we can actually get things done quickly. Another is capacity. How do we bring in partners, timber companies, states, counties, tribes? We have some incredible resources out there that can help do that work. We just need to make it easier for federal land managers and those entities to partner together to actually conduct that work.
I like that. And they're ready to go here. So a couple of things. You go back to the regulations and the streamlining of those. It's an industry tool for environmental groups, this lawfare, so to speak. But it's really non-productive, except for, in my mind, it's more for fundraising in a lot of ways. I'm trying to sense, Hannah Downey with us again, PERC's policy director. PERC is the Property and Environment Research Center based out of Bozeman, 40 years going and going strong as well. I'm trying to search for some signs that the environmental community will want to get back on task about actually, you know, doing this kind of work on the ground. Are you seeing it anywhere? Are you seeing a recognition that there's going to be more collaboration and less lawfare?
Tom, that's a great question. And I think it's a complicated answer, unfortunately. Yeah. The short answer is yes. I do think there's a great awareness and recognition, especially from the reasonable environmental community, that more work has to be done. I'll highlight one big piece of federal legislation that I've been really lucky to work on recently, the Fix Our Forest Act. that addresses a lot of the pieces that we've just talked about right now. Litigation reform, streamlining approvals, expediting the NEPA process, those sorts of pieces. It has been really cool to see a ton of sportsmen's groups and especially Montana-centric groups, too. I'm thinking, you know, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Boone and Crockett Club, be able to step in and support those efforts. The catch, as you pointed out, is all it takes is really one environmental litigant to manipulate the system, to use the courts to challenge these pieces and hold it all up. And the catch is that it doesn't actually get us the environmental outcomes we want. I'll use an example in the Klamath National Forest, where there was a project proposed to help restore the forest health, benefit wildlife, all those good pieces. Well, a group had concerns about cutting trees down, and so they litigated and they challenged the process and gummed up the whole system. And while that project was caught in all of this review process, the forest burned down and destroyed the exact wildlife habitat that these groups claimed they wanted to be protecting. They claimed they wanted to protect the northern spotted owl, and instead a fire came through and destroyed all that habitat. So it's counterproductive if we focus on those pieces instead of doing the good restoration work we know benefits wildlife and our watersheds and outdoor recreation and clean air and all those things we care about.
Are the courts moving on it at all? It seems like they've been quick to injunct and then slow to respond after that. Are they moving in any direction that could be helpful for the rest of us?
That's another great question, Tom. I think part of it is that we need to change the policies that, you know, the courts are responding to. Mm-hmm. So a big priority here and a number one priority for us at PERC is fixing the disastrous Cottonwood decision that came out of the Ninth Circuit and is drawn from a forest restoration project right here in Bozeman, where we wanted to protect our watershed. And groups sued and just added on these duplicative layers of consultation over endangered species. And it's just used as a tool to gum up the process and hold up the work that we know needs to happen. And so that's where we're now working on policy changes to try and fix that so that now the courts are able to respond to those good policies instead of being stuck kind of in those bad policies and precedents that have existed.
Yeah, and we see a lot of pushback at the national level. I'm not sure there's a will in Congress to do that, but states are trying to enact their own kinds of policies that will help them in that regard, and that's a good movement to go to. We're going to run out of time, doggone it, because I know I got to get you out of here. Hannah Downey, again, is PERC's policy director. Tell us about this map, all right, this wildfire risk map. I think some of the interesting statistics, and it's PERC.org to find all these things. Over the period study, 12.5% of all Forest Service land in the West burned, with only 3.6% of that land receiving fuel reduction treatment there. Talk about this map. What did we learn?
Yeah, absolutely. So this map is a really cool project that PERC was able to do with some researchers at University of California, Davis. You can visit PERC.org/wildfire map if you want to take a look for yourself. It's an interactive tool where we were able to sort by congressional district across the West, looking at Forest Service specific data and say how much of this district is Forest Service land, what percentage has burned, what's at high risk, and how much land has been treated. And as you just pointed out, Tom, the problem that we're seeing is that there's a large amount of land at risk of wildfire, a large amount of land that has burned, but not that much land being treated. And as we've talked about, those treatments of mechanical thinning and prescribed fire, that's what's needed to reduce our wildfire risk. That's what's needed to promote these healthy forest ecosystems. And so that dynamic is really problematic, and I think this will be to no surprise of most listeners, but as we went through, we figured out that the highest risk areas where least amount of treatment's happening, largely focused in California. Yeah. Here in Montana, I'll look at the western part of the state, our first congressional district, and that's where we see, like, over half of that district is managed by the Forest Service. That's a huge footprint. And we're looking at over half of then that Forest Service land is at high wildfire risk, but we've only treated about 2% of that. So again, just to the point of, we need to be dramatically scaling up that work, and this map is a really powerful tool to help us show that discrepancy and hopefully inspire or push more of our policymakers and our federal leaders to take action.
Yeah, thanks for tracking it. It's important because it's pretty evident when they look at this kind of data. Let's move over to some things that are going to be more subjective in a way, so to speak. These are going to be suggestions, but you have printed a report here on some 10 suggestions that you think the Department of Interior ought to pursue. Some of those things we kind of covered here a little bit, but let's get into those. What do you like? I mean, we could list all 10 of them, so to speak. Let's go to some of the top ones that you really like, and maybe we can get them all in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit of background on this report that we just put out, which is called 10 Ideas for the Interior Department. And again, that's available on our website, perc.org, if you want to dig in more.
It's free.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, it's free. And so the big picture with this is that we saw, the incoming Trump administration and Secretary Burgum at the Department of the Interior. And we see this as a really big opportunity to prioritize conservation outcomes while also streamlining government processes and delivering solutions that benefit both people and the environment. We see this as a really big change. This administration wants to think big, set some big goals. And so we said, let's do that when it comes to the environment. So maybe I'll talk about a few buckets and happy to dive in wherever you want to go with this, Tom. But one big bucket of reform that we see is how do we improve the Endangered Species Act? I think many Montanans know it from the grizzly bear and wolf wars and all of those things as just this big regulatory punitive approach of the federal government coming in and managing species in our state. And even with all of that level, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, only about 3% of species listed under the Endangered Species Act are recovering. That's a big problem, or have recovered, excuse me. And that's a big problem. So we said, why don't we triple that rate, get up to 10% of recovering species? It's going to take some time. 10% is still a failing grade, as I'm sure you can conclude. But how do we at least move the needle there? And we realize that has to happen through regulatory reform. We need to lift these punitive measures. We need to make it so that states and landowners are better involved. So that's a big bucket. Another is how do we better manage our federal lands, whether that's our national parks that are facing 20-plus billion dollars of deferred maintenance. We got to start taking care of the lands we own rather than just focusing on new visitor centers or pieces like that. How can we improve our federal rangelands? Wild horses are a major obstacle on that, competing with native species for forage. So we gotta get more horses off the range. And a lot comes back to wildfire as well. How do we increase those fuel treatments? So happy to dig on anything there, but those are some of the big pictures we're looking at.
Well, let's look at delisting the grizzly bears, right? It's kind of like the wolves, back and forth. I think the people who stall on this are really doing it, that those radical environmentalists are doing it for fundraising, industry purposes, so to speak, and using the tools that's allowed to them, the lawfare, in a lot of ways. But I also think that there is, again, this recognition that to be productive, to accomplish something here, this ball's got to move forward. What's the likelihood? I know the Trump administration changes things, but that's a four-year pass, so to speak, four-year path. Give us the status and where it can get to, maybe even in 4 years.
Yeah. The grizzly bear is such a challenging situation because on one hand, we've recovered so many of these bear populations and we should be celebrating their remarkable recovery success. This has been a huge investment by the states and especially Montana leading the way with Wyoming and Idaho and being able to say we've done so much great work here and yet being caught in this tangle of, you pointed out, litigation and returning these bears to the list and federal oversight. I'll throw out a few numbers to help put some scale on all of this. So the greater Yellowstone grizzly bear population, that's obviously kind of around Yellowstone National Park, Montana's hugely implicated in that. There was a recovery target set by the Fish and Wildlife Service of 500 bears. We're estimated at over 1,000. Like, so we have doubled that. That's huge success.
And that's been for 10 years. That's been for a decade, that number.
Yeah, we've had a long history of success there. Yeah. And with the Northern Continental Divide population, so up a little closer to the glacier, their target was set at 800. And we, again, have over 1,100 estimated right now. Like, those are huge, huge buffers of success, which is incredible. And so one of our most recent frustrations here is that it was, okay, the Biden administration was considering, what do we do with these bear populations? And unfortunately, they had found that, well, these two populations have recovered so well that now they're starting to kind of connect with each other. And so they can no longer be considered distinct. So we have to consider all bear populations, you know, over into Washington, all these things, as we consider the future of bears being listed, of grizzly bears being listed on the under the Endangered Species Act. And that's really disheartening to us to say, oh my gosh, these states and landowners and communities and NGOs have invested so much in this bear's recovery, and we've seen such a great success. And now we're the victims of our own success.
Yeah.
And this is the exact wrong message that the Endangered Species Act sends, where we've done so well in recovery, and we didn't recognize it early enough, so that now there's all these legal complications associated with it where we can't recognize and celebrate that recovery.
All right, I know you got to go. What are you working on now?
Great question. So our big priority is we want to get these ideas turned into action. We put out some really big goals, some really big ideas for this administration, and we are really excited to work with this administration to get this done. I was in Washington, D.C. just a few weeks back and was able to present these ideas with some of the PERC team to Secretary Burgum at the Department of the Interior, and he was really excited about a lot of them, which was amazing. I think there's huge opportunity to look at charging international visitors, a higher fee to visit our national parks as a way to generate some revenue. So I think that's going to be one that you'll see us go be really excited about and working a lot on in the upcoming months. But again, continuing a lot of this wildfire work, there's some good pieces happening in Congress we want to get across the finish line, and a lot of this endangered species work as well. So we'll be busy.
Good. We'll keep an eye out for you too, okay?
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate your interest in these topics and bringing them to Montana.
Yeah, great. And thank you for the work you guys do. All right. We'll chat with you down the road.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. Hannah Downey, PERC's Policy Director, again, based out of Bozeman.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.